They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." And Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Welcome back, faithful listeners. I'm your host, Nathan Mogliines, joined as always by my co-host and co-brother, Elliot Mogliines. Elliot, first of all, I just want to plug the blog. You did post successfully on time your ranking of the Coen Brothers movies. I thought it was a pretty fantastic write-up. Very much enjoyed all of the criticism Barton Fink got. I hate that movie. So I love to see you criticize it. Also, I did get a shout out in a ridiculous write-up about Big Lebowski. Terrible movie. Anyways, very good. I'd recommend the audience go and look at it. But also, we have some movie news to maybe jump into. Firstly, Elliot, have you seen the trailer for the Minecraft movie?
Okay. Well, first of all, I just want to say that regarding the blog, yes, that post is up. I'm also writing a review for The Fall Guy. That'll be up tomorrow. So, well, today when you're listening to this. So go ahead and give that a read. I have not watched the Minecraft trailer because I saw a screenshot of it. And I was like, that looks like one of the worst things ever created by human hands. I'm not going to watch that. So, I have only seen a single frame of it, but that was enough to convince me that the movie was a mistake.
That's a huge, I was just going to say, it looks terrible. It looks, I don't understand people's obsession with making animated products into live action, and then the route they always go is just, let's animate everything that's animated anyway, and then just chuck some people in front of a green screen, because it looks terrible. It doesn't look like anything real or appealing. Jack Black is in the movie as Steve, and he is literally just Jack Black in a blue t-shirt. We've got the cringe, terrible, Marvel-esque, quippy, not funny dialogue where, you know, people are like rolling their eyes and basically just practically looking at the camera and saying, wow, that's, isn't this movie silly? That's crazy, dude. Laugh at it. Yeah, it looks terrible. It's kind of an affront to cinema. Speaking of affronts to cinema, Joker 2 got its world premiere and it's getting absolutely lambasted by the critics. It is getting torn to shreds. The harshest thing that I saw was that one of the reviews I read said, without a Scorsese script to steal from, Todd Phillips shows how unoriginal and terrible he is as a director, which is rough. I don't know if that's exactly, but the gist was, you know, without a Taxi Driver, Todd's got nothing. But anyway, in terms of some discussion with you, Elliot, the film festival season is kicking off, and so I wanted to list some movies that have piqued my interest from these film festivals and get your thoughts on them. I've got three. Okay, so the first one we've already talked a little bit about, but Jason Reitman's Saturday Night got a ton of positive reviews, saying it's a ton of fun, it's very energetic, the cast is amazing. I've already said that I'm excited for this movie, so I continue to be excited with these positive reviews. The second movie, so Elliot, keep track, there's three that you'll have to comment on. The second movie is Joshua Oppenheimer, who, Elliot, you might know as the director of The Act of Killing. He's a pretty I don't know about popular, but pretty successful documentarian, is making his first narrative feature with The End, which follows, I think it's Tilda Swinton and I want to say Michael Shannon, as wealthy elites living in a salt mine following an apocalyptic event that their family is somewhat responsible for. Apparently it's a musical or something. The reviews are kind of middling, but the movie sounds so bizarre and crazy that I really want to see it. I'm very interested in it. And then finally is The Brutalist, which is, I think, like a 3 hour and 30 minute movie about a Hungarian architect who flees from Hungary in World War II, or kind of post-World War II, ends up in America, and then has to build a big old building in the brutalist style, I would assume, for a wealthy person. Adrian Brody plays the Hungarian architect, and it's getting a lot of praise. I think it sounds really interesting. But those are the three movies from the festivals that have caught my attention as something that I'm interested in seeing. Elliot, what are your thoughts on those? Have you been following the festivals at all? Do you have some movies that you're interested in from these?
That's a lot of questions. I haven't been following these festivals because I don't put much stock in what comes out of the festivals. Like, Joker 2, apparently when it premiered at Venice or wherever, got another of those, like, 3 hour standing ovations or something. The same, yeah. Like, Horizon got a 5 minute standing ovation, and Beetlejuice got a 6 minute standing ovation or whatever. It doesn't mean anything. These people are buffoons. They don't know anything.
Wow.
Except unless some of our listeners went to Venice, in which case they're very discerning, cultured people.
Sober-minded critics, yeah.
I could not care less about Saturday Night. I have yet to watch a movie by Jason Reitman that I really, really enjoy. And I just don't like Saturday Night Live. Like, I've just never found it particularly funny or a particularly engaging style. So it's not necessarily that I think the movie will be bad or looks bad. I haven't seen the trailer. It's just that I don't care about it. I did hear about Oppenheimer's movie. That seems like a weird idea, but I mean, it could be good. I don't know. I don't have very many thoughts on that. And then I also heard about The Brutalist, and mostly through reviews that I saw, or like headlines for reviews that I saw, and dude, they were like masterpiece level, this is one of the best movies ever made, like shoe in for best picture at the Oscars, a shoe in for everyone's number one spot when they rank their favorite movies type reviews. So, I mean, I'm more than happy for it to be that. I'll certainly watch it because it sounds like a neat little movie. But yeah, I guess I'm more interested than I am like super hyped of like, yeah, that's totally gonna be fantastic. I'm just like, oh wow, there must be something to this, or maybe there isn't, because people love Once Upon a Time in America, and that movie's trash.
Wow. All right, well, be sure to keep tuned in to Magellan's of the Movies. We're going to continue delivering the important information about the movies that come February when the Oscar nominations come out. These are the movies that are going to get nominations. We've got our finger on the pulse. We know everything, so you don't have to worry about it. But speaking of animated films then made into live action, we've got that's a perfect segue into the movie we're talking about today. I'm going to do the intro for this. I picked this movie. I think this is probably one of the last kind of touchstones of our childhood, besides like Independence Day, that we haven't reviewed for the podcast in terms of a movie that we watched a ton, that we were very, very familiar with? Our, I want to say we didn't own this movie, but our grandparents had a VHS of it. And so almost every time we would go there, when they wanted to take a nap or stop having to deal with young children, they would put this VHS in. So this is the 1990 live-action Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, the very first live-action adaptation of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles property. I think it's probably the most critically acclaimed of all of the TMNT movies, certainly more critically acclaimed than the Michael Bay movies, and I guess it's up for debate if it's better than the two animated movies that they've made. I don't know how many actual animated movies they've made. There could be more. But anyway, this is the one we're talking about. If you're not familiar with the premise is right there in the title. They are teenagers who are, in fact, mutant turtles who have been taught by their mutant rat mentor Splinter how to fight crime and stuff. So this movie is their introduction. I haven't seen this movie in a long time, so I was very interested to go back to it, see if it's any good. Elliot, I'm going to throw it to you for this part. You know, what are your first impressions, first thoughts on this long overdue newest viewing of this movie?
Yeah, dude, this, I mean, I can't even imagine how many times we've watched this movie. Because, like, literally, almost every single time we went to Grandma and Grandpa's house, we would watch this movie. Yeah. They had a little TV in the sunroom, which was right off of the living room. And we would go in there and watch the movie while the grown-ups would do grown-up things like watch sports and talk about taxes or whatever.
Yeah.
And then, oh my gosh, it's just every single time. I mean, I can't even imagine how many times I've seen this movie. And actually, I had recently watched this movie already because I heard that it was on Paramount Plus, and I was like, oh wow, I'll see what it's like as an adult. And yeah, so obviously this review is going to be a little difficult because I have so much tied up in this movie, so much nostalgia and so many memories of it, that it's going to be a little tricky to kind of stand at a remove from myself and look objectively at this movie. I think that this movie has a lot of charm to it. It is like so 90s because there's a rap song and the end credits.
Oh yeah.
The villain's like master plan is an empire of petty theft. Like most of these kids, if they get arrested, they're gonna do like 6 months in jail or something.
In juvie.
Yeah, or do some community service because they're stealing like packs of cigarettes.
Yeah.
There's so many dated cultural references.
Dated? Super relevant.
Yeah, James Cagney, so relevant to today's youth.
Is that who that was?
I'm pretty sure, because Raphael said, not Cagney.
Wow, yeah, that's not even relevant in the 90s. That's like a 50s movie star.
So I think that this movie is like, this movie is definitely good for children. Like, it's flashy, there's plenty of action, the turtles are funny, they say some funny things, they're energetic. And I do think that there are some things, I know I'm just saying random words here, but there are some things that I think are legitimately good about the movie. Like, Casey Jones, really liked Casey Jones and the guy who played him this time around. I thought that the action was surprisingly decent. It had that kind of visceral, gritty is the wrong word, but it just had that, like, very tangible feeling that action movies from this time have, because there's just no special effects to amplify it.
Yeah.
So everything just feels a little bit more real, which I enjoyed. I laughed a lot, not always when the movie was trying to make me laugh. And so I think that if I were to be objective, this movie is probably, like, pretty good. It's, like, decent. It's nothing special. My subjective experience of it was a lot more, was a lot more pleasant, because it was just like a nostalgia bath for me. So there's definitely things, this movie definitely has problems. It really suffers from a lack of a main character. It's an ensemble movie because it's about all of the turtles, which can work, but in this instance, I don't think really does, because none of them really stand out, except for Raphael, who it seems like they're going to give a legitimate arc to. It seems like they set him up for that with this early scene of Splinter talking to him and being like, you're the only one of your brothers who's trying to do things by himself. So I was like, oh, well, maybe they're gonna, like, parlay that into an actual arc, and they don't really. The villain's plan, yeah, like I said, it's not. And Shredder in this movie is just like Darth Vader. Like, he's so clearly been made to mimic Darth Vader, from his voice to his dialogue to his appearance. He's just like, he's just Darth Vader. But I think that's funny. So, I don't know. That's like, I'm all over the place with this movie in terms of what I enjoy, what I don't enjoy. It's going to be hard to, like, make that into a cohesive stream of thoughts, obviously.
Yeah. Well, I guess my opening thoughts, I was surprised in a lot of ways with how good this movie was, in my opinion. You already mentioned the fight scenes. I think, just before we get into the meat of kind of the narrative and the characters, I think the rubber suits look way better than they should. And I like, they look a little stupid. And certainly if you pay too much attention to the mouths when they're trying to talk, it looks goofy. But these suits look really good, especially in the fight scenes, and look a lot better than I would expect them to if it was like a puppet and it doesn't look like a gross CGI monstrosity like the Michael Bay turtles do. I like the rubber suits personally. I think they look decent. I like Splinter's puppet. Apparently this was the last movie Jim Henson ever worked on, because he died like a month after the release. But he worked with people on the puppeteering. Also Brian Henson, who directed some of the Muppets movies after Jim passed, was the second unit director for this movie. So he directed the flashback sequences with the little puppet Splinter, which I just think is neat. Yeah, I also agree. It's a very 90s movie, which means it also has a lot of qualities that I obviously, yeah, there's a lot of references that I don't understand or are just not funny anymore. But it also has a lot of qualities that I appreciate about 90s movies. I agree, Splinter's grand plan is pretty stupid.
Shredder's grand
plan. Shredder's, oh gosh, they need more different names. Shredder's plan is kind of stupid. And we also get no insight into why this is his plan. Apparently this happened in Japan, so I guess he tried this petty thief thing in Japan and then it didn't work out or something happened. It's unclear what. And he
got attacked by a rat and he had to go to America.
He had to travel to America. Sure. But I kind of like how small scale the danger in the film is. I appreciate that. I think that's something more modern movies need to have, is just an understanding that the world doesn't have to be ending for me to care about the good guys winning. So I appreciate that. I like the qualities of, you know, a 90s grimy sort of New York. I like that sort of tone and vibe. Yeah, so I think in general, I was surprised with how many elements of this movie I liked more as an adult than I did as a kid. That as a kid, I wasn't like, wow, dude, Shredder's plan is really small scale, and I really appreciate the smaller scale of... Obviously, I didn't care about that as a child. But as an adult who's seen quite a few more movies, I do appreciate that quite a bit more. But yeah, Elliot, I think let's maybe start with the discussion of the movie with a discussion of the turtles. You already said that there's not really a main character. The movie kind of eschews the usual turtle storyline, which is that Raph and Leo butt heads, and which it kind of has for a little bit, but then it kind of, like you said, ignores that completely to just have the four turtles be hanging out. What did you think of the four turtles? Do you think this is a good version of them? Do they behave like teenagers in your mind? You know, what do you think of their camaraderie?
Well, they don't act like I did when I was a teenager. But that's okay. And I don't really know that many teenagers, nor did I interact with that many when I was a teenager. So it's hard for me to say. They definitely act like movie teenagers, I'll say.
Yeah.
Just like rambunctious, rowdy, perpetually hungry kids, basically, who were joking around and that kind of stuff. So I thought that they were definitely likable. Mm. I thought that they did have a camaraderie that I enjoyed in the quieter moments when, because like in this movie, the main facilitator of the action is that Splinter gets kidnapped or something by Shredder. And then Shredder just like does not care about him for the rest of the movie. Like he talks to him a few times, but mostly he's just like, oh, I'll just leave him in there. And so in those quieter moments when they're like worried about Splinter or trying to figure out what to do next, or worried about Raphael who gets hurt about the midway point through the movie, I think that it provides a good contrast between their usual happy-go-lucky attitudes and then when they go to a farm after a defeat. And they're sitting around the campfire trying to, like, meditate to, like, I don't know, contact Splinter telepathically or something. And it succeeds to a certain extent. And then afterwards, they're like, they're crying and they're kind of hugging each other. And I really liked that. I thought that that was a really nice, sweet moment where they did feel like brothers who were consoling each other after the loss of a beloved family member. So I thought all that's good. And I definitely think that this movie's at best when it's not reaching for things that are beyond its grasp or that it doesn't really follow through on. Because I'm thinking specifically of Raphael's aborted character arc. Like, if they just didn't do that, if that just wasn't a thing that they set up and then didn't follow through on, I think that would have been a lot better. Because there is enough latent charm in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as an ensemble that I don't think I necessarily need to have a main character or a particularly robust character arc. Like, their charisma and their likability is enough as a group to carry me through. So I think it would have been better if they had just, well, obviously it would have been better if they had tried and then followed through. But if they're not going to follow through, I would say it would have been better if they had just not tried at all. And it would have been fine. And as it is, it's still fine. Because the turtles as a group are enough to carry me through. And I like that they have these more tender moments of actual brotherhood. I think if throughout the whole movie they were just, all they did was just talk about pizza and fighting and stuff, that would eventually get pretty annoying. But these moments are good to ground the characters. So I liked them. I thought they were all funny. They all had good voice actors. Or I think most of them were voice acted by the people who were in the suits, except for Donatello, who was voiced by Corey Feldman, of all people. I liked them. I thought they were good. This is definitely a very good rendition of these characters, although we should say this is more a rendition of the cartoon characters than it is the comic book characters, because the comic book characters are much more serious. And as many people know, the original comic book is a parody of Teen Titans.
Teen Titans? What?
I think so, yeah.
Isn't it a parody of Daredevil? Because it's the foot and the hand, stick and splinter.
Maybe it's both. Maybe there's
The names might be from...
Well, it's a parody of comic books.
It's a parody of overly serious comic books, is what I believe it was originally intended to be.
Yeah, sure. And funnily enough, Splinter's costume... Not Splinter, see? I just did it just like you did. Shredder's costume.
Too similar.
Shredder's costume in this movie is pretty much exactly what his costume is in the original comic books. That it's kind of just like a red shirt and pants, the helmet, and the gauntlet blade thing.
The Shredder.
The part. Shredder.
Yeah. I agree. I think this is a pretty good version of these characters. I like their camaraderie. I like their use of 90s catchphrases. I love saying cowabunga, that's sick. Saying radical, that's dope. Well, radical. I just think it's so funny and charming. I do think that Leonardo kind of gets very well, and apparently the director of the movie did not get final cut. And so his original version would have had a much more extensive sequence at the farmhouse that they go to after Raphael is injured, where each of the turtles would have gone through a much more significant sort of character arc, that apparently Michelangelo gets depressed and stops telling jokes, which is his whole thing. Donatello and Casey would have gotten much more screen time. Leonardo would have gotten much more screen time in terms of him being the leader somewhat of the turtles. But without all that, I do feel like some of the turtle, like Leonardo, gets very little to do. Michelangelo and Donatello are almost interchangeable. Donatello is moderately more intellectual than Mikey, but it's not that meaningful. But I do like a lot of the things that you said in terms of they do feel like brothers, they do feel like a family unit. And yeah, I think this movie is a really good example of, not to continue overpraising 90s movies, but it's another good example of a movie with a silly premise or a silly kind of idea, and the movie taking it very seriously. We talked about this somewhat in our review of the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movie, that I think one of the negatives of the Marvel cinematic universe is, and just in general, a lack of being able to take things seriously, is the stuff I was talking about with the Minecraft movie, right? That the movie has to undercut its own narrative, its own ideas, because it's seen as stupid or silly if it's taking something stupid or silly very seriously. And I think this movie is a really good example that that's not always a bad thing, taking a silly thing seriously. I think the movie does a really good job taking the idea of mutant Ninja Turtles seriously, and I think it has some emotional payoffs like the ones you mentioned because of that. I think Casey Jones is another great example. He is, like you said, he's kind of a standout. I think he's really funny. I think I enjoy, you know, watching him fight. I love his little quips. And apparently they originally had like one scene showing him like hearing the reports of petty theft and then like buying a hockey mask or something. And I like that they cut it and that no one ever addresses like, what is his deal? He just wanders around parks until he hears a crime and then goes and beats up the criminals with a hockey stick. That's crazy. You know, but I like that the movie takes it seriously, that like what he's doing is legitimate or is legitimate in the universe of this movie. I appreciate that. And yeah, I think Shredder as a villain, I think he's very effective because, one, they're cribbing from one of the greatest movie villains of all time, Darth Vader. But also, I just think his final fight with the turtles is great. I love their kind of, they're not being like quippy about it, but they are just kind of, they're not taking it as seriously as they need to, especially at the beginning. But it's a great fight, and then Splinter just absolutely destroying Shredder. That's great. That's classic. That's classic cinema, Elliot. So yeah, I like a lot of the characters in the movie. I think the movie does a lot with very little, and I think that's a really positive quality that it has.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought up Raimi's Spider-Man, because that was something that I was thinking about a lot during this movie, and how we talked about that movie is very sincere in the way that it plays with its premise. And this movie is the same thing. It's not realistic in the way that Nolan's Batman movies, Dark Knight Rises excepted, are trying to be realistic. They're trying to be like, okay, they're trying to say, what would Batman look like in the real world? How would he get his gadgets? What would he use? That kind of stuff. But they are taking it seriously. They're acting as if this is happening in a world where people understand that this is odd, but not in that Marvel meta sense of like winking at the camera, nudging the audience, being like, oh, isn't this a little bit silly? They're playing it straight, which I like. I think that we need more sincerity in movies. We need movies to stop. Movies just need to get some self-confidence back. They need to They need to stop trying to undercut themselves.
Yeah. Top Gun Maverick, that's a confident movie. It yeah. knows it's silly, and at no point does anyone say, wow, that was kind of goofy.
Wow. Yeah, bringing back like a 50-year-old man to be a fighter pilot on a seriously important national mission. That's a little weird, isn't it? Nudge, nudge.
No. But yeah, I agree. And I think another positive quality about the movie is that it does a really good job of absorbing us into the world to also take it seriously. I like the opening of the movie with April O'Neil's. If you really listen to what she's saying a real word salad of like, she's constant. It seems like they need the voiceover to go on for longer than the amount of information she actually has to convey. Because a couple of times she said something and then like defined it, and I was like, yeah, that's what that it's like. She said, like, you know, there's a string of petty thefts, so, you know, a lot of watches and rings, and she just kept, it was a really interesting voiceover. Anyway, but I like this opening shot and this opening sort of sequence, because I think it does a really good job of absorbing us into the world, where, you know, petty theft isn't, like, a huge issue. But the tone of the music, which I really like the music in this movie. It could just be because I'm really, really familiar with it. But as soon as it started, I was like, oh, that's sick. But it does a really good job of bringing us into this world and making us take it as seriously as the characters are taking it. That by the end of the opening sequence, I was like, oh no, what if someone steals my wallet? Like, I'm afraid of petty theft. What if someone takes my hand radio that I walk around with? You know, and I think the movie does a really good job of absorbing us into the world. I like the way it introduces all of the different characters of, you know, Casey Jones, Shredder, the Turtles, April O'Neil. Even Danny, also, Danny and his whole, like, sort of pseudo-storyline feels so much like Fight Club to me, and Shredder's whole deal of, like, finding disillusioned male youth and giving them an outlet for, you know, their aggression and violence. It feels so much like Fight Club in a way that I don't really love Fight Club. I was like, this is, like, a better version of Fight Club. Let's... every best of the 90s list, get rid of Fight Club, replace it with this movie, it's better. I mean that somewhat jokingly, but I do think the movie has elements of relevant issues that make it feel a little more real. You know, that kids are running away, that's a concerning thing. Kids are running away and then committing crime, that's even more concerning. But yeah, I just like a lot of the elements of the movie.
Did you know that the author of Fight Club, like, refuses to sign that book because so many of its fans are like, oh man, Tyler Durden is right on! And he's like, no, you're an idiot. That's not what's supposed to be happening here.
That's tough. Him and Alan Moore should, like, link up.
They should. Because they both...
Yeah,
they both despise... Well, I don't think the author hates what he created. I think he just thinks people misunderstand it. Alan Moore is like...
I think Alan Moore really doesn't like it.
What was I going to say? Oh, I hated Danny. Dude, I really did not like Danny. His storyline felt so tacked on and unnecessary. Like, he was definitely a character, a functional character, in that he was just... He just served this function of letting the Turtles know where Splinter was, and then accidentally letting Shredder know where the Turtles are. Or not even, because it's so funny, because Danny's talking to Splinter, and he's got a picture of Leonardo in his pocket or something. And then Shredder finds him, and he finds the picture, and he's like, they're back. And then he doesn't ask Danny any follow-up questions. He just walks off.
Yeah, Shredder's a poor, he's not very good at this, because, yeah, like you said, he captures Splinter, and then he doesn't talk to him at all. At no point is he ever like, hey, dude, you're a giant rat, what's up with that? Like, that's crazy. There's got to be a story there. He's not curious. You know, that's his biggest failing. He's not curious.
Yeah, it's important to be curious.
So true.
And, like, I did not love Shredder in this movie. I think that he definitely had a lot of presence, which I appreciated. And I liked his design, and I did like the Darth Vader voice that they had going on for him. But the problem is that we get like zero insight into him as a character and his motivations and stuff. And he doesn't have the same like inherent charisma and charm that the turtles do to paper over those cracks. For when it came to him, he was relatively understated, and that more, I mean, it's not a minimalist take, but the more minimalist take on him did leave room for me to actually ask, like, what is Shredder doing here? Does he just want money? Does he just want power? What is his whole deal? And then the final fight between him and the turtles, he was very forgiving because he would like knock them over and then just not pay attention to them. And there were multiple times where the turtles would huddle up and then talk about what's happening. And Shredder is literally in the shot, just like pacing around, waiting for them to do something.
That's against the ninja code to attack during the enemy's group huddle.
What does Shredder care? Splinter literally says that he's going to die without honor. Although I do really like how Splinter comes in at the last moment and then just makes such short work of Shredder. Because yeah. Splinter has been built up as the master sensei. And then when he's in, it makes you wonder how he got captured in the first place, actually.
They jumped him. There was like 40 of them.
Okay, maybe.
And they had guns.
For the first time in the movie, they had guns.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like that. And I like how Casey Jones brutally murders Shredder by crushing him in the back of a dump truck. Although he doesn't actually die.
No, he doesn't die, yeah.
Because he comes back in the second one. And then he becomes a mutant.
Yeah.
At the end.
Super Shredder.
Yeah. And then he loses because a little bridge falls on him. Oops. But that doesn't matter. We're not talking about the second one.
That's a great movie.
Yeah. Bebop and Rocksteady, man. They're what everyone comes to the movies for.
Yeah. I don't really agree. I don't think Danny is in the movie enough to annoy me. I don't think, honestly, any of the characters are in it enough to annoy me. But none of them are in it so little that I'm like, wow, this character like should be... Well, I guess... No, I think all of the characters are fine. I don't have an issue with Danny. I think... I kind of like, again, how simple Danny's whole character arc is, and I like, you know, Splinter telling him, like, hey, I think if you put some effort and maybe looked a little, you would see that your dad cares about you and that you're lashing out irrationally, as the kid from the Santa Claus would say. But yeah, I like Danny. I think he's a good... I don't think he's a good character. He's not, like, a masterwork. But I think he's just as good as any of the other characters.
That's... You're so dumb, Nathan.
Okay. That's so mean.
That's fine.
I must have missed all of the times on Ebert and Siskel when Ebert just said, hey, Gene, you're a moron. Like, you're stupid.
All right, I'm sorry.
Good, you should be.
People like different things at different levels for different reasons, and that's fine. But I personally do not like Danny. And I think that this is another instance where I think the movie is kind of reaching for something that it doesn't end up going for all the way, in that the Foot Clan or the Foot Ninjas are a bunch of disaffected, at-risk youths who are just looking for connection and for family. One of my favorite lines from this movie that I quote to this day is Casey Jones saying, "You call this here and that down there family?" And he's saying that to a young Sam Rockwell, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah, that is true.
And then at the end, young Sam Rockwell, who's made a few appearances throughout this movie, like he's the person when they introduce the Foot Clan's hideout, was the person who's saying, "Whatever we want to do, you know, do." And then he offers them cigarettes.
We got it here.
Yeah. He's a real Brooklyn type. And so Sam Rockwell, at the end, when he's up there with the police, is like, "Oh, I'll tell you where to get your answers and stuff." And it's clear that they've rejected Shredder's Tyler Durden mentality, if indeed he has that, which he probably doesn't. But yeah, I think that it's another thing that's a little bit underdeveloped, of they've got this thread of the youth of America, or at least New York City, falling in with the wrong crowd because they're looking for a connection, they're looking for a family, a chosen family, and that makes them vulnerable to people like Shredder and Tyler Durden. So that's all fine, but it's just like, it's just another undercooked element that I'm like, I would be fine if this wasn't here. It's not terrible, but I think the movie would probably be better served if it was just, the Foot Clan was just a bunch of thugs who happened to be led by Sam Rockwell.
Yeah. See, I think this is where we just get to a split in our personalities, that your mindset is like, "Oh, I wouldn't care if this was gone." And I'm just like, "Oh, I'm kind of happy this is here." Like, it's, I would agree, it's kind of underdeveloped, and it's not like it's saying something revelatory or even something incredibly interesting, but it is something that I find mildly engaging, and I don't think the movie is worse off for having this element, especially in a especially in a kid's movie. Anytime a kid's movie has just these elements of, you know, here's some things that's kind of meat for an adult to chew on, or something that's more interesting that a kid's not going to really care about. I didn't care about disaffected youth when I was a disaffected youth. But I really appreciate those sorts of things. So I put it as a plus for the movie, that I'm like, "Oh, you didn't have to have this element in here, but I think it's interesting that this is what you chose." Plus, it gives us Sam Rockwell offering cigarettes to teens. That's so terrible. I'm surprised we didn't start smoking after seeing this movie.
That's just, well, and it's because we learned at the end that Shredder's methods are not the way.
Yeah. The turtle's way. Eating pizza and eating saying pizza. Radical.
Much healthier.
Dang.
Than smoking.
Anyway, I don't have a ton else to say. I've actually talked myself up. So my final rating is going to be higher than I originally planned it. I guess I have, maybe I should say some negatives here before I toss it to you for final thoughts. I do think in terms of children's movies, this is not as incredible. It doesn't have as much stuff for me as an adult as something like The Incredibles or something like Finding Nemo that we reviewed. The side characters are not quite as amazing as they are in some of those movies, but I think on the whole, this movie is really good, and I think it holds up. Maybe it just holds up because I watched it as a kid, and every time I watch it, I'm just like, "Dang, I want to eat pizza in the sewers with my brothers. That sounds fun." But I can only enjoy the movie as, I can only review the movie as myself. And I watched this movie every time I went to my grandparents from the age of like 5 to 18, you know, now. So I have no choice other than to, you know, I'm going to give it a decent rating.
No, dude, it's a tragedy because that was a VHS tape and yeah. Grandma doesn't have a VHS player anymore, I don't think.
I have a VHS player.
Well, you should, next time you're there, you should take it if she still has it, which is not a guarantee. I know where this is, like the Magellan's at the movie nostalgia hour, but that's just, I was literally just reminded. The other thing we would watch at Grandma and Grandpa's house is The Land Before Time. That's the next movie we should review, is The Land Before Time.
I rewatched that movie recently because it was on some streaming service. And yeah, my brief thoughts on that one, I think that one's okay. I think the animation style, I love 90s animation.
Oh yeah.
Where it feels like they put no effort into making the world look like the landscape look like something believable or something that people could be walking around in. It just looks so unbelievable, and I really like the animation in Land Before Time.
Those T-Rexes
and the story, yeah, those are okay, I guess.
No, those T-Rexes were really scary as a kid.
The T-Rex is scary, yeah.
And that scene where we're really going on about this, but that scene where Sarah, the Triceratops, funny name, charges at the T-Rex and then its eye opens. Oh, it's so scary. Dude, that's scarier than anything in John Carpenter's The Thing.
Holy cow.
Okay, anyway, we're not talking about Land Before Time. We're talking about TMNT. Yeah, I like this movie. I think it's a good time. It's funny. It's fun. It's enjoyable. We didn't end up talking as much about the action as we could have, but I do think that the action is very good for what it is. So many fond memories of pretending to beat each other up after we would watch this movie, throwing ourselves onto the couch and being like, oh, you got me. Good times.
Wow.
I also really like the special effects in this movie, the rubber suits, the puppets. I really like that analog 90s charm. I love miniatures and puppets and stuff like that. It's one of the reasons why I like Lord of the Rings, is because they have so many miniatures. It's not the best movie in the world, obviously. And it has problems with, sometimes it overcomplicates itself, but just the sincerity with which it plays its premise is really refreshing in the age of cynicism and irony that we live in to a certain extent. So, yeah, I think this movie's good despite its flaws. It's enjoyable. I would even recommend you watch it if you haven't. If you're a Turtles fan, in which case you almost certainly have already watched this, or if you just like 90s movies, I think this is a good one. So I might as well rate it because I've just basically given my thoughts. I'm gonna give it a B-. It's a decent movie. It's fun. It's good. I like it.
Okay. I think I already said pretty much everything I want to say. I'm gonna give it a 7.9 out of 10. I really enjoy this movie. I have a really good time when I watch it. It makes me happy.
I like being bad. It makes me happy.
What is that from Spider-Man 3?
From Spider-Man 3, yeah, man. Let's go. Best one.
Yeah, my favorite. Now we're going way down the... But I love Eddie Brock in the church when he prays, dear God. Please kill
Peter Parker. I come before you humble and humiliated.
I just love Topher Grace plays it so serious. That's another movie where I'm like, it's so stupid and it's really funny, but like everyone's taking it so seriously. Tobey Maguire is taking that dancing, snapping nonsense so seriously.
Dude, I love Bernard finally getting around to telling Harry the blade that pierced your father's heart came from his own glider.
From his own glider. Which doesn't prove anything, by the way. It could still have been Spider-Man. Any evidence that it's not. Anyway, let's get to some recommendations here. I'm going to go first. I'm going to recommend a movie that this is very much a recommendation for if you're an adult and you're looking for a movie with maybe a similar vibe, a similar amount of silliness and seriousness. I'm going to recommend Quentin Tarantino's Kill Bill Volume 2. You could also watch Kill Bill Volume 1. That one's okay. My preference is Volume 2. I think it's more interesting. I like the fight scenes more. I like the reveal. It probably has one of my favorite climaxes in probably top 20 climax, in my opinion. It's one of my favorite Quentin Tarantino movies. I think it has a ton of this very serious elements, but also very silly elements. All of the flashbacks with the bride learning karate and kung fu and stuff are clearly pastiche, are clearly in the same vein as Enter the Dragon and kung fu movies of the 80s and stuff. But I think this movie is really good. The first one's okay, although it's much more just a straight action scene, action scene, action scene. I really like how Volume 2 makes it much more interesting, that it's not just a physical challenge, but there's also an emotional challenge that the bride has to overcome in order to kill Bill. And I like all those things. Elliot's about to diss Quentin Tarantino. He's never seen these two movies, so he has no leg to stand on. But that's my recommendation, is Kill Bill duology, but specifically the second.
Yeah, Tarantino's a hack. No one needs to watch his movies.
Wow.
I haven't seen that movie, so I don't know.
No way.
My recommendation is another classic 90s movie that's 90s through and through. It has an objectively somewhat silly premise, but is played very sincerely and has that really good visceral 90s action atmosphere to it, and that's John Woo's Hard Boiled. I watched this movie for the first time like about a year ago, and I really enjoyed it. Everything that you've heard about John Woo as an action director is true. This movie is like, it's so visceral, the action, because it's a lot of gunfights, and everything, every part of the choreography is meant to facilitate some kind of explosion. Like, there's pyrotechnics going off the walls. When people get shot, they invariably are standing in front of something breakable they can fly back into and explode into a million pieces. It's that classic, like, well, hard-boiled cop movie where the cop is reeling from a loss, and he's like, no, it's personal. And he teams up with a well-meaning bad guy, or reformed bad guy, and goes on the hunt for the real bad guy. It's really good. Honestly, if you're not going to watch this movie, just look up Hard Boiled on YouTube. Look up Hard Boiled Hospital Wunner and let your mind be blown, because it's fantastic. It's one of the best Wunners I've ever seen. So yeah, go definitely watch this movie. Although obviously, if you're a child, don't watch this movie. It's rated R. You need to watch, you need to stick with TMNT for now.
Yeah. Watch The Secret of the Ooze.
Yeah, there you go. And then watch TMNT 3. I don't even remember what it's called.
Something about time. Because they time travel to Japan.
It's about time.
Yeah, that's what it is. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3. It's about time. Wow. Yeah. What a fun episode. Just getting to reminisce.
Getting sidetracked.
We love sidetracks.
But however fun this was, we shouldn't let it detract from our knowledge that life is hard and full of disappointments.
Wow. Sure, of course, Elliot. Thank you for that helpful reminder. Here's my helpful reminder. Go check out the blog. We've got tons of interesting content on there. New reviews posted. Yeah, so check that out. Leave a comment. If you like the review, leave a comment.
Send us an email.
Send us an email, yeah. Did you watch these movies as a child? What are your fond memories?
What's your favorite color? Tell us that by email.
Email me. But yeah, we're going to be back next week with another review of a great movie. So be sure to tune in when that comes out. And have a great week in between that time.